And without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dave Swift from Printy Wines and Orange. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Morning, Jill. I'm very well, thank you.
That is good. Thank you for joining us. What's it like in Orange today?
It is a reasonably sunny day, a bit of wind, but we have had a bit of rain. So I'm very happy to see both some sunshine and the wind to dry everything out.
So Orange, I think I may have mentioned to you before, I know the Orange area very well because I actually went to Charles Sturt University in Bathurst, about 45 minutes away, and I'm very acclimatized to the freezing cold winters and the particularly hot summer days. Is it still like that there?
Yeah, it is. I think the thing that surprises most people about Orange, as you say, is just how cold it does get. It is a true cool climate, and yes, we do get some warmer summers, but this year particularly, it feels a little bit more like I remember it as a child, where they're, you know, relatively mild summers, which is perfect.
It actually, you just mentioned, it's definitely a cool climate wine-growing region, and it sort of does I guess, you know, we often speak about cool climate regions, of course, you know, Tasmania and there are certain parts of Victoria, et cetera. But what can you actually categorise as what a cool climate wine-growing region is?
Well, that's really interesting. There are a number of different ways to categorise it. For us, Orange, obviously, through our elevation, it's that diurnal temperature change between night and day that we get as a result of that elevation. It's not categorized as simply as just saying, right, we get a very cold winter and a warm. It's actually to do with, more so to do with the mean January temperature during your growing season. So, and it's that diurnal change that is what makes Orange quite unique. You know, that elevation gives us really cool nights, and then we get the heat during the day. So we just don't get, like some of those warmer climates, we just don't get that searing heat during the day, but then also those warm temperatures at night.
Sure. And you've actually got, like, the highest vineyards are at like 1,100 metres, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. So Mount Knoblis, that is our highest point, just under 1,400 metres, which was an extinct volcano, is what gives us the elevations. So we kind of build from 600 metres and we kind of build to that point. And as you say, like, our highest vineyards top out just near 1,100 metres above sea level.
Yeah, goodness me. And so you're actually, I'd like to go into a little bit of the background of you, because I know we'll touch more on the Orange area shortly, but how you actually got into wine when you started as a graphic designer in Sydney, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. I grew up on the farm here. It was always part of our lifestyle and part of our childhood. And for that reason, you know, agriculture and farming always had a part to play in my life. It wasn't until we got into viticulture, though, that it really started to take interest. Whilst I enjoyed crops and cattle, which is what we did previously, I didn't really see a lifestyle or a long-term, you know, life plan doing that. It was that intensive agriculture thing that really sort of, you know, interested me, and I pivoted pretty quickly when we went down that path and found myself back here.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that, and I'm sure a lot of people who have been fortunate enough to drink the Printy wines are very happy that you made that move. You've got some great table wines, but you particularly have focused on sparkling, and you have a range called the Swift Sparkling, where you have your vintage, your rosé, your non-vintage. I know them very well, and actually had a bottle of, it was one of the non-vintage just a few weeks ago, and it's absolutely delicious. And I know you follow the French method, but can you tell us a bit about why the sparklings grow so well in that region and why you've actually focused on creating such a wide range of them?
Yeah, sure. It came into the business after seeing, you know, a number of, we built our winery in 2004. So we'd had a number of vintages looking at fruit, specifically Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, coming in from higher elevations that we were using for table wines. And for a number of reasons, but the raw analysis on that fruit, really, you know, there are a lot of comparatives as we're harvesting to champagne in terms of pH and acid and flavour profiles. And So it was kind of a bit of a thought bubble to start with. And a lot of brands, not only in Orange but throughout Australia, add sparkling as an individual wine to their portfolio. But from what we'd seen and the diversity of sites and elevations in Orange, we felt that there was broader scope to do a complete brand, essentially. You know, the same way we showcase Chardonnay across different sites and different elevations and styles, we felt that we could do the same thing with sparkling wines. And it was a little bit of a, you know, it was a bit of a gamble at the time, but we felt confident then that, you know, whether or not the wines were going to be showstoppers or not, but we felt really confident that the region had the ability to make that traditional method style really well. So that was where we kind of started the project, and the rest is kind of history from there. We're very passionate about it, and now adding more wines to that portfolio. There are now 5 wines available under the Swift Sparkling, 2 non-vintage, cuvée and a rosé, and then 3 vintage wines that are all unique in their own way. And that's what the brand's about. It's about showcasing for people the diversity of styles that come through either blend components or vintage-specific wines and or elevation and sites. So there are a number of different ways to show how those wines vary within the region.
Sure. So you just mentioned the 2 of the non-vintage and 3 of the vintage. So you've got the Blanc de Blancs that fit in there, the 2011 and 2017.
Yes.
And you've got which?
Yeah, so they are, I mean, obviously they're sort of our flagships. You know, I always feel the same way about table wines as well. You know, straight varietals really showcase the craft, I suppose, and what you're trying to do is really, you know, take the drinker on a bit of a journey there to understand that particular variety in this region, because it's all about sight. You know, our wines, you know, we're very proud of the quality, but they're different, they're unique, they're Orange, and that's what the Blanc de Blanc and the Blanc de Noir are about. It's about showing that Chardonnay as a style and Pinot Noir as a style look like this. Yes. And that particular year is the expression that you see in the bottle at that point in time.
That's right. Actually, Blanc de Blanc is definitely one of my absolute faves. We've been speaking about it a lot on the show recently, especially leading up to Christmas, and obviously Christmas being the perfect time for bubbles. We've actually had Printy Wines mentioned quite a few times in the last few months. Tyson Stelz is our Taste Champagne. Was fortunate enough to go ahead in Brisbane last year. It was the only city that had it. I think it's meant to be in February in the other capital cities this year. But Tyson, and actually, I think quite a few people are aware that he considers Printy Wines the very best sparkling wines in New South Wales, and that's a very high accolade coming from, you know, the champagne man himself. There was also someone who I actually met at Taste Champagne and then brought onto the show only a week later. And she imports fantastic French champagnes, the Henri, Abelle, and just some great stuff. And she was actually saying that her very favourite Australian sparkling was Printy as well. And so I had Printy in the back of my mind, and I thought, I've got to get them on because I love their wines. I know them well. It's just, it has to be done. So can we just talk a little bit more about them? Because, excuse me, Blanc de Blanc's just really becoming a much more of a well-known sparkling to drink. It seems like, you know, once upon a time, it was champagne or it was sparkling. And now it's just, it's that extra different version, and people are paying far more attention to it. You know, even if you go to restaurants, there's a whole page that's dedicated just to Blanc de Blancs, as opposed to it just appearing, you know, once or twice. And I can see you nodding there. You're like, oh yeah, you've been waiting for this. How long have you thought that Blanc de Blanc is incredible? And are you also noticing that it's coming into its own now more than ever?
Yeah, it is, definitely. I think that, you know, looking at the context of how and what we drink in terms of premium sparkling and champagne in Australia, we tend to drink in a very small window. You know, Brut, essentially, is the market here in Australia. And Blanc de Blanc is certainly taking a lot of interest. I think in many ways it's the simplicity of the product. It's very easy for people to understand. Blanc de Blanc, white of whites, it's 100% Chardonnay. And I think that for that reason, it's a great wine or vehicle for people to learn with, you know, understand style change. And you see that development of Chardonnay over, you know, our wines are aged wines. You know, our current release Blanc de Blanc is a 2011. And so you see very similar characteristics in that wine that you would see in an aged Chardonnay. You know, whilst you don't see any oak integration or influence on that wine, but you do see that development, you know, that nuttiness, the development of the Chardonnay fruit over time. So I think in many ways it's about the fact that people understand, there's already a bit of an understanding of the style, whereas Blanc de Noir, which I think, you know, I think is a fantastic wine, is something that I guess there's a bit of a blank in people's minds because, you know, a white Pinot, I don't really understand what I'm looking for. I don't understand the style. And so it's all a bit, you know, it's all a bit of a leap of faith. Whereas Blanc de Blanc, you know, I think there's an expectation of what they're going to see.
Well, that's a very good point. So what would you recommend to people if, you know, if you were suggesting them to have a Blanc de Noir, how would you suggest the best way to drink it? In what sort of scenario?
Listen, the Blanc de Noir, there's a lovely savouriness to the style. You know, the Pinot, that richness of Pinot that comes through. And this is the other thing that, you know, we often encourage people to match sparkling wines with food. And in Australia, we tend to drink them as an aperitif style. We tend to enjoy them, you know, as a celebratory drink, maybe with a canapé, maybe, and then we roll on to something else. And Blanc de Noir is a good example of a wine where you've got enough richness behind the fruit, there's enough texture, there's enough body there to be able to match it with food. And so, you know, we're always encouraging people to do so. And because of that, you know, that lovely textural element of the wine, it matches really well with things like prosciutto and, you know, things that have a bit of an oiliness to it because, after all of these sparkling wines or champagne, particularly wines of age, it's the acid structure that really holds that wine together. So they do really well at cutting through some fattiness in food. You don't want something too heavy, something very delicate, but they are more than just an aperitif style.
For sure. So something like small morsels of fried Korean chicken.
Correct. Absolutely.
It's match made in heaven. You just wouldn't think that here you are with a 2011, you know, Blanc de Noir, and you're going to pair it with some Korean chicken. It is quite strange, but you're right. It cuts through that fattiness, and it really becomes quite a versatile style of wine to drink. And it's not just the aperitif. It's quite great. And just not to move off too much of that, but just before Christmas, we were talking about we had someone on about gin. And how, you know, gin cocktails are taking the world by storm and cocktails on the whole, and something that Americans have always done very well, but Australians are yet to do, is start to do the food matching with cocktails. And it is definitely something that we're going to see a lot more of as people are beginning to branch away just from the standard table wines for their lunches and dinners, et cetera. And it's quite exciting, really, to see what's going to be coming up. And, of course, in those cocktails, how we're getting the combination of the different sparklings. You know, everyone's aware of the good old Bellinis and that sort of cocktail. They're very old school. But, you know, just imagine what are some really fun ones coming up. And I know this is probably a question you wouldn't have expected me to ask, but if you were to mix one of your sparklings, I'm not saying the Blanc de Blanc, but one of your sparklings with another type of spirit to create a cocktail, what would it be?
Oh, great question. You want something that's dry, you know, essentially, and that's something that our style of sparkling is really good at, and that's why, you know, certain styles of sparkling aren't great to be mixing with sweet mixes. So, you know, I'd be looking at something like, you know, a gin or vermouth or something that has that dryness in style, because I think that's what makes these wines a lovely sort of blend.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, gin is quite a perfect match for sparkling, but I think it is something fun. Look, we will move back to wine, everybody who's out there listening now. But I just thought that was quite an interesting angle because it is something we'll be seeing far more of. So So back to Swift, what I'd like to touch on is Orange itself as a wine region. I don't know how many people out there have really had that many Orange wines. It's a relatively decent size and they make some outstanding Chardonnays, obviously sparklings. But what could you give us in a bit of a nutshell, if we had someone travelling from, say Victoria or South Australia, so they're jumping on a flight from Melbourne or Adelaide, where are they best to fly into? What's the best way to actually get to the Orange region and around? And maybe just some ideas of, say, accommodation and restaurants. That just sounded like a lot of questions in one, didn't it?
No, that's okay. Orange is becoming more and more accessible every day. We've now, although COVID has delayed some of these plans, but we now have direct flights we've got two airlines that fly direct from Sydney. We've got direct flights to Melbourne and Brisbane, now into Orange. And then obviously the access from Canberra and Sydney, you're 2.5 to 3 hours drive, depending where you're leaving from. So access has never been easier to Orange. I guess choosing when to come is one of the other things. What we're finding now is Orange is proving to be a wonderful visitation place during those winter months. People are starting to appreciate the cool climate experience, rug up, come and enjoy it. We do get snow every year, is basically a guarantee here now. And so when here, I guess it's about, Jill, it's about trying to find essentially enough things to do when you're here in town. The wine side and the food side are wonderful. There's so many different, variations of cellar doors now and styles and elevations. So the wine experience is fantastic, but the food side is also, essentially, I think what put Orange on the map long before wine did.
Yes.
That fresh produce, the restaurants, the Selkirks of the day, who are pioneers in that fine dining space in Orange. We now have, we've got Tonic, we've still got Lollies, we've got Chard Restaurant in Orange that's doing some amazing things. It would be remiss of me to mention that we're also opening a restaurant at the end of this month.
It would have been remiss, so tell us about it.
Yeah, so Prenti Dining will open in our new cellar door and restaurant at the end of this month, which we're really excited about. It's been a many years in the making. We've got a really great, young, vibrant young head chef who's come to us from Barara Waters Inn in Sydney, who was sous chef.
Know it very well.
At Barara Waters. So whilst we'll do some... there'll be a three-course version, but we're also going to be doing a degustation with matched wines as a standard. So we're really excited to get that and showcase not only the wines but also, the produce of the Central West and Orange, which will be fantastic. So there's great, accommodation. We've got, Bing Street Hotel, which is a boutique hotel. Really is an amazing facility. A conversion of an old heritage house in Orange with added new rooms out the back. It really is very special. But the other thing, Jill, I guess that, it's what else you do. And what we're finding in Orange is the retail aspect is proving to be very popular for visitors. We've got some fantastic shop owners and retailers in Orange and surrounds. And the outdoors. I can see Chris Carpenter on my screen and he'll tell you about the benefits of outdoor activity around Canberra. But
Chris, that's great.
Yeah.
Chris, jump on in if you want to.
Yeah, for sure.
Orange is improving from a mountain bike perspective. There's a lot of, obviously we've got the Mount Knobbles here. We've got a lot of forest and national park. That is in that sort of early day transition of building more and more mountain bike trails. And so I think, in development of Orange, it'll be that outdoor space that we see really come in leaps and bounds to offer a bit of diversity to just coming and eating and drinking.
That's fantastic. And, of course, such a beautiful drive from Sydney itself. to actually get there. The amount of beauty that you're taking in, it really makes for a beautiful weekend. And obviously about to speak to Chris coming from Canberra, very different region again, different wines again, but all sensational. So, look, Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. That's been a great eye-opener. I think it's been wonderful for people to hear about a region that I don't think they probably have had on the show before.